Hi, I'm Nicole Ward from Forgotten Ciders and Eastman's Antique Apples.
And I'm Rafe Ward.
And you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 74.
Forgotten Cider.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly cider-centric podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we're chatting with Nicole and Rafe Ward, and they're from Michigan, a cidery called Forgotten Ciders and an orchard called Eastman's Antique Apples. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. We're going to kick off this episode with a cider swag giveaway contest. And all you have to do to enter is to take a screenshot of your phone or your computer where you're listening to Cider Chat. And if you post that on Twitter, you could post it and tag at Cider Chat. On Instagram, you could post it and tag at Cider Chat Ciderville, or on Facebook, you could post it at the Cider Chat Facebook page. And each time you do that, you'll be entered to win. And what you'll be winning is a t-shirt from Forgotten Ciders. That's Nicole and Rafe on this week's podcast. It's a really nice t-shirt. It's black. It has their logo of an apple and three bottles of cider. And on the back, it says, "The harder, the better." Yeah, that's kind of like a little sexy, little naughty. We like it. And there are two sizes, an extra large and a medium. So there's a choice between those two. And pretty easy to enter to win. If you want more details, just go to ciderchat.com and go to the page that says a cider swag, and it will reiterate what I just said to you. Two winners will be selected by April 14th. And this is exclusive for the U.S. and Canada. So don't hesitate. If you're listening right now, take that screenshot and post it online. And if you are a patron of a Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page, you are automatically entered into this contest. So that's another benny of becoming a patron of a Cider Chat. And I do want to say a little thank you to John, who just became a patron this week. It just means so much to this podcast because it helps me cover some of the baseline costs of getting this podcast out weekly to you and your earbuds and to cider enthusiasts around the world. Thank you so much, John. And you too can become a patron just by going to the Patreon page for Cider Chat. You'll find a link to that in the show notes to episode number 74. Well, we've skipped a couple episodes of our most recent iTunes review and rating, but we don't want to wait another week because when somebody takes the time to list something like that, well, we think it's just grand. Take it away, Perry Pear.
Hello. This is the segment where I, Perry Pear, read to you the most recent iTunes review and rating. This week, it is titled "Great Show," and it's written by Chipmunk Ridge. Chipmunks, you must know, do have quite a fondness for pears. Chipmunk Ridge writes, "Just found you. Look forward to going back in the archives and listening and watching cider regain its rightful place in popularity in the U.S. I agree, that would be a good thing, and I'd like to add that Perry should also regain its rightful place in popularity in the U.S. too. That's just my two cents, and I'm sticking to it. This is Perry Pear for now. Now, back over to you, Rhea."
Thank you very much, Perry Pear. I think somebody let a chipmunk inside the studio there, so make sure that the door opens and you let him out, okay?
Like I said, Rhea, they do love pears. Okay, Midlars, open up the door. And go on, you chipmunks. Go on, get out of here for now.
I see one hiding behind a bushel basket of pears over there. Go on, chipmunks. Go on.
Okay, thanks, Palms. I really appreciate that. We want to make sure that the barn stays nice and tight. There's so much action going on here in Ciderville. Whew, I'll tell you. Well, while the Palms are checking behind all the baskets and making sure that, indeed, the barn is all right and tight, I think it's about time that we grab a glass and join this chat with Nicole and Rafe Ward of Forgotten Ciders and Eastman Antique Apples. Welcome, Rafe, Nicole, to Cider Chat. We're meeting right now at CiderCon 2017 in Chicago, and it's a beautiful day here. They're both sitting in front of me, these two amazing people. They have some photos that I'm going to take some pictures of. The book by Tom Buford, Apples of North America. And I know that you have an amazing orchard we're going to be speaking about.
Yeah.
A thousand varieties.
Yeah, over a thousand. Over a thousand.
Over a thousand. That's kind of like...
We've like lost count a little bit. Oh. So like we're safe in saying over a thousand.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
we have some unidentified, roughly 200 trees that we don't know what they are.
Wow, that's a lot of apples.
Yeah. In the move from kind of like an old binder with lined paper and handwritten notes to, you know, an Excel document to try to manage everything, we lost a few pages, and so that's why we don't know what those trees are.
This was a family orchard.
Yes, grandpa and uncle started the orchard roughly 30 years ago. And from there, they were really interested in the apple varieties. My uncle kind of spearheaded that. And we're missing maybe the business aspect of it. So didn't do a lot with it besides plant the orchard. And then we bought it, or I bought it, I guess, at the time with my brother and parents about 8 years ago now.
I married into it.
Well, you go, girl. Everybody's like, jealous. They planted all these varieties of apples. Where were they getting the apples from?
So all over the U.S. at that time, and all over the world, actually. Mm. And this was pre-internet. So it was a lot of handwritten notes, telephone calls, looking in catalogs, ordering Scion wood, contacting other orchards. So my uncle did a lot of that, you know, without email or anything at his disposal. So,
and that's also pre kind of regulations bringing things into the country too,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
that kind of changes it. And let's just say your uncle's full name.
His name is John Eastman.
John Eastman, and your grandfather?
Douglas Eastman.
Douglas Eastman. Okay, and thus the Eastman. Kind of like heritage apples,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we wanted to really honor the legacy that they started. And the land that the orchard is on goes back several generations as well. So we just felt like we could really pay homage to everyone who had come before us on that piece of property and then who had started the trees by, you know, using their name in the orchard.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. Were they cider makers?
They were not cider makers. No, not at the time. In fact, when we bought the orchard, were not cider makers either. It was a pretty happy day in my life when I realized I owned this orchard and I could take these apples and make alcohol out of them. So, you know, I just graduated college when I bought the orchard.
Wow.
So we took those apples and started making alcohol. A couple years in, the first couple years, didn't even realize what we had. In fact, a lot of the apples that we did have were traditional hard cider apples, and as you taste them, you spit them out. So mm-hmm. at times, mm-hmm. we almost ripped some of those trees out because we didn't think they were any good.
not understanding, yeah, right, what you have, and right, that these apples have those specific properties for, sure, making cider. You think you're growing apples to eat, mm-hmm, and you're like, well, no one's going to eat that apple. It's, mm-hmm, disgusting. So, yeah, there was almost a few moments that the family talks about, like, we almost ripped those trees out.
Wow, good foresight. So what did you think you were going to be doing instead of apples? In college, you say you just graduated from college. What,
yeah,
were you thinking I'm going to be when I grow up, type of thing?
So I actually still have another job besides the orchard and cidery. I do management consulting. I went into management information systems, mm-hmm, in college, and out of there started working for IBM, doing consulting and a couple other places in between there and now. But I still work outside of the orchard, mm-hmm, and the cidery. Nicole is given up her job and is working full-time on that, so.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
We just had our first fall season, which is just our crazy time. So we just had our first one where that was the only job that I had. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of exciting because we were able to do some new things, mm-hmm, things we talked about doing, we dreamt about doing, and we were able to see them come to fruition. It was kind of like, oh my gosh, when you finally focus on something, look what can happen.
So it was
good.
Big time. So it's the two of you, and are there more partners in this, family members? Or?
So the last couple of years, it's been with my brother, his wife, and my parents, Tim and Cindy Ward, and then Casey and Erica Ward. We are actually in process of buying everyone out. My parents are retired. They're ready to be done.
And just drink cider.
Although my dad's not quite ready to be done with all the apples, so he may still help out a little bit. And then my brother and his wife are both, they both have other jobs, have two young boys within a year of each other, so are going to focus on work and family.
And bringing them out to the orchard and climbing an apple tree.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They all volunteer to, you know, continue to hang out and help out.
Quality control, yeah, testing, so,
of course,
ciders. Yeah.
Of course. And the magic of being in an orchard and all the different seasons is so wonderful.
It is magical.
Adults and children.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it really is. So where's the learning curve here? I'm kind of curious. You know, you started off...
Steep, always present.
Right. But what was some of, like, the aha moments? Like, holy smokes, I need to know this. Or were there certain things that really stood out initially?
The big thing was, I think the first big thing, at least for me, was a lot of the licensing and going through the process of getting, mm-hmm, our small winemaker's license.
Mm-hmm.
That was a steep learning curve. We had a little help from a lawyer, but it still took a lot on our end. Of course, making the cider has always been a learning curve, but we're fortunate enough that the apples do a lot of the work, and we let them do a lot of the work. We're not, I would say we're the best cider makers. We can't take really plain juice and turn it into something great. Mm-hmm. We have really great ingredients to start with, so we're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to tinker
and
change things.
Are you, like, storing your apples or through the year? I mean, because you have 1,000 varieties. You have, what? How many acres?
16.
16 acres, right? So you're picking straight out.
Yep.
Are you letting them drop, or are you picking?
No.
Picking.
You're picking?
No,
okay.
Drop. Yeah.
All right. How, what kind of size team do you have for that?
Us.
The six of us.
Are these standard size apple trees?
Semi-dwarf.
Semi-dwarf. Okay.
Yeah. But we don't really do too much with ladders because, like, we always say by the time you get the ladder out and pick on the ladder, like, you could just go and pick something else. So, although this year was a really light apple year from us, so especially on, like, some of our favorite trees, if there was even, like, one apple up there, like, we'd be getting the ladder out to get it because, mm-hmm, we wanted every single apple we could.
Right.
But
so you have all these apples. You're pressing it all at once? Do you have a press on site?
We do have a press on site. It's a small press that we're currently using.
A basket press?
It is a
rack and cloth.
Okay. Small rack and cloth. So it's not as small as a basket, but it's a small rack and cloth,
sure,
about 18 inches, I think.
Wow.
And so we actually press throughout the season. So our season is much longer than a lot of other orchard seasons. We have apples come as early as July, although we don't really pick those because they go down pretty fast. But we do start picking in August, and then our season goes through mid-November with some of the apples hanging. And so we'll press throughout the year. We do not have cold storage, back to kind of your initial question.
Right.
So we are picking and pressing relatively quick. You know, as it gets colder in Michigan, we store outside and we can leave them sit for longer, let them sweat a little bit.
You do. Okay. Mm-hmm. And are you letting them sweat after you press or before?
Before we press.
Before.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And is that pretty much the standard with all your ciders that you're making? You're letting them sweat a bit? Is that just because it's happening because you can't keep up?
It's later in the season because we can.
Right.
So one of our ciders is called Autumn Seduction, and that's our first apples of the season that we pick and press pretty early on. And there's probably like a 2 to 3 day pick everything and then press it window. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we get towards the end of the season, we could have a couple weeks of picking and storing outside before we do a giant pressing. And then there's kind of more medium-sized pressings in the middle of this season, just depending on what we have going on and what we can get picked. And yeah.
And our, like our Mad Russian, so one of our reds that
is beautiful.
You'll see, is an earlier apple. So it comes a little bit earlier in the season. So that gets pressed, obviously separate from a lot of other things. We'll pick those the time that they come ripe, and that varies a little bit year to year, typically within a 2 week window, we found. So depending on Mother Nature and what happens with rain and things like that, we have all our picking data, and that's just the best guess. We still have to go out to every tree and kind of taste it and see if it's ready or not.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah, it is.
So let's talk. We have five ciders here that both Nicole and Rafe were kind enough to bring. And the color array is just magnificent. So I'm holding my hand right now, the Mad Russian, and there is a big burly guy with a beard, a full beard, and, you know, kind of like looking like a Russian.
He's a little Russian, yeah.
With, you know, smashing an apple on a tree stump. And this color is, wow, it's just like a deep, rich red color.
Cranberry.
Cranberry,
almost,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's just talk about this cider, since you mentioned it.
So that, I mean, I think that's kind of one of our flagship ciders. The look of it, the name of it, the taste of it is incredibly unique, really draws people in. So it is made using some of our red fleshed apples, and that's one of the things that makes our orchard unique is some of the varieties that we grow of the 1,000+ are red flesh, so have a hint of pink in them all the way to the blood red, like some of these pictures that we brought. So primarily the giant Russian crab is one of the main red fleshed apples that we use in that, so that's kind of where the Mad Russian name came from. And the taste of it starts off almost aggressively dry and tart up front, kind of one of those like suck your taste buds in moments, and then it mellows and sweetens as you drink it. So we always recommend when people are tasting this cider initially, take 2 to 3 sips of it to really get the full flavor profile and discover the complexity of it. And it's odd because most of our ciders lean on the dry tart side, this being on the far end of the dry tart spectrum, but for whatever reason, I think because of the complexity of it, people that like a sweeter beverage will also gravitate towards this drink.
So that's just one profile of apples?
Yeah.
The giant Russian crab, which is giant because the photo that you have there, it's full size in your hand.
Yeah, it's a huge crab apple, for sure.
Yeah, it's not a single varietal. There's a couple other apples in there. Another Russian crab called and we probably pronounce it wrong, but we call it a Night White Skyana. Very similar in characteristic. Also from Russia, goes into that. And then we do blend it down a little bit because when we first tried it with just the couple red varieties, it was way too tart and aggressive, even for our taste and we like the tart side of cider. So.
Yeah, so it is blended with some golden cider to cut the crab tartness of it.
Are all your ciders, are any of them still... Or
no,
we've done a couple, you know, a case here and there of the varieties we make that are still, but we do force carbonate almost all of our ciders.
And what kind of yeast are you using? Are you doing natural yeast in your
We do not use... We did one variety where we did do a natural yeast. Mm-hmm. We did not repeat that this year, just because towards the end of its life, it kind of started to get off a little bit. We would like to do a little bit more with natural yeast. In fact, one of the sessions I'm planning to go to is around the yeast.
With Shay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be on the podcast.
Okay, great. So I'm excited to go to that and learn a little bit more. We would like to... Because that yeast actually that we did do the natural yeast with turned out really well. It was one of our more popular ciders when we did have it. And so to be able to replicate something that like that or understand maybe how it could be a little more stable. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we use a couple different yeasts in our ciders that we go to, more of the kind of champagne-y yeast, some that came out of Ashton Station, I think, recommendations, things like that. So we tried this year to use a low-acid yeast just because our cider does get a little bit higher in the acid. Mm-hmm. Our Scarlet Russian, which we don't have here, is a little more of what we call the feminine side of the Mad Russian. It's a little bit softer, a little bit sweeter, and we tried to use a low-acid yeast in that this year, and we'll see how that turns out.
How exciting. Wow. That color is just absolutely stunning. And who's doing your labels? Because each label is so unique.
So, yeah, labels have always been interesting. We are a early startup, right? So we're trying to cut every cost possible. That one we actually did pay to get done from a local agency in Midland, Michigan, and they did a great job. They took exactly what we wanted. And did that for us. We also went to 99 Designs a label or two, and that's actually where our logo came from.
Okay, yeah, which you're wearing right there with the apple, and there's three bottles, and it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, so 99 Designs, for anyone starting a new company like or a cidery, is a great option because you can... You know, the more feedback you get, you can pick what you want, and, you know, you can either guarantee that you're going to pay, or if you don't see something you like, you don't have to pay, depending on what option you choose. The other ones I've actually done myself. So using a program I bought for my Mac, and then a lot of Shutterstock images. And that is about the cheapest option we found, because that costs us about 10 to 20 bucks a label.
Great. So those are good tips. 99 Design and Shutterstock.
Yep.
Perfect.
Depends on how talented you can kind of, like, how quickly you can pick up on new programs and stuff. So it all
that's
just
right.
depends.
Yeah. They're pretty approachable.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. All right. Well, let's keep on talking about your ciders.
Sure.
Which one would you like to chat about next?
Well, I think this is probably another what we consider flagship cider for us. So this is Private Stash. It's a golden variety cider. And the really interesting fact about Private Stash is it has over 150 different varieties of apples blended into it.
How do you count that? How do you figure that out?
So when we pick. I mean, this is... I don't think people understand sometimes how labor-intensive an orchard is. And, like, I don't know, maybe we're behind on technologies or something, but we literally pick into our crates. We have little scraps of paper that we write which tree it is and the date we picked it, and we tuck it into the crate. And then when we go back and we're organizing for a pressing, we pull all of our tags, and then we type them into our computer. So that's kind of how we keep track of what goes into the different pressings.
Yep.
And do you have your trees tagged at all?
We do have our trees tagged. Unfortunately, again, the foresight of running a business wasn't there when they were planting the orchard. So we may have three trees of a single variety, but they are not
next to each other.
They're all over the orchard.
Oh, dear.
And they're not organized at all by ripening date, which would be a lot easier in our lives to go and to this section of the orchard, then this section of the orchard, then the next section. Unfortunately, we're driving all over the orchard to pick trees because they're ripe at that time. So,
is this a level field?
It is a level field.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
we're really flat where we're from.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Well, that really makes it a lot more approachable. Not that it's not easy driving all over the place, but so 150 different varieties. In this label here has your logo. On the top it says Private Stash. On the bottom it says Forgotten Ciders. and then it has a little write-up on either side. This is 6.9% ABV.
Yep.
And that's, I'm thinking that's about...
That's where, all of our
all
ciders,
ciders
come
are,
out.
Are staying right there.
Yep.
Because that's really the, where they're rolling in from, or...?
That's, a little bit of where they're rolling in from, a little bit of, you know, the law has now changed, but the law at the time was under 7%, or you could go over, but it was a lot
right.
of different things you had to get into, so we tried to keep them around that 6.9%.
You think that's going to change for you now in 2017
I think
and the Cider Act?
Some of ours will get higher.
Yeah.
Especially some of our traditional cider apples can get quite a bit higher.
Okay.
So.
I would like to do more of a high gravity style on at least one.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of, I mean, if you're looking at what's going on in like the craft beer market, high gravity beers are popular.
Yeah.
And again, just to give people a different option, but we find 6.9 ends up being really well just for the cider, for how we make it, and for how people are enjoying it with us.
Absolutely. So the private stash, going back to this, the color on this is just, as you said, like a beautiful golden hue on it.
Yeah.
Has a nice gold crown cap, and all the ciders are all with a little crown cap. This is a 750ml bottle.
Yes.
As most of them on the table. Really, really lovely. Are you filtering your ciders at all, or you're just racking over? And what kind of vessels are you using to make your cider?
We have a couple of different size stainless steel tanks.
Mm-hmm.
We do a couple IBCs, just depending on where we are in the season.
And those are plastic square containers.
Yeah. We pretty much go to the 750 bottles. We just started moving to some 22s, but like we don't have a canning line. I don't think we'll go to anything smaller than the 22.
Yet. You never know. Never say never in this industry.
In the foreseeable future. Uh-huh. I mean, we'd love to do canning. It looks like a lot of other cider makers are going there. I think it's an approachable size for the market, but we just... can't make that happen mm-hmm. as a small cider maker right
sure.
now. So
yeah. That's a wise choice.
I keep making really good cider, and for us that means letting the apples speak for themselves. So we're
mm-hmm.
not adding any colors, sugars, flavors. We don't back sweeten anything. We've just started to get into adding kind of some local and natural ingredients into our ciders.
Nice.
So like our Hotten cider here, it's another golden variety cider,
mm-hmm.
But that uses locally grown habanero peppers that we actually get at the farmer's market where we started selling our apples
mm-hmm.
and now also sell our hard cider at.
Mm-hmm.
So Michigan made a change and you're able to now sell hard cider or wines and samples down at your local farmer's market. And so that's been a great avenue for us because people knew us as the apple people. And we were able to make this connection of, you know, this apple that you really like, that's actually in this cider that you're sampling right now. So we were able to get locally grown habaneros. You get a really nice pepper aroma on this cider. You get some heat, but we're not out there to ruin your day with the pepper flavor, and we don't want you to be like screaming for some water. So you get some heat, it builds a little bit, and then it kind of tapers off.
Yeah. And this label is, can you actually close that door?
Yep.
Thank you. Just for listeners, while Nicole's speaking, all of a sudden the workshop that was from the alcohol and tobacco trade group just exited, so there's a little bit of background noise there. So getting back to this label, I really like it because it says on the top Hot, and then it's a letter N and cider, and in between you have the logo for Hot, which is your apple with the three bottles in there. And then it just has a flame coming up.
Well,
so,
it's actually, you might want to talk about this because this is your baby.
Or it's like a torch.
It's
a sail torch?
It's also a character, if you'll notice.
Oh,
there's actually a person in there. It's a female character.
Oh, I totally see that.
Silhouette.
Thank you for pointing that out.
That's
sexy.
It's a little
very sexy.
Envelope pushing there.
Yeah, but you know what? Come on up, America. Let's lighten up. I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's a very sexy label. Yeah.
Sure.
So it's not too hot.
It's not too hot.
Not too hot.
This winter, while I was with a group of friends having a cider and cheese tasting, I opened the Hot and Cider bottle that Nicole and Rafe had passed to me. And I want to say, it was out of a bevy of ciders, the one that flew out of the bottle the quickest, as everyone had to have a pour and savor the well balance between the chilies and the amazing apples that they get at the Eastman Antique Apple Orchard. A really nice variation on chilies and cider. Highly recommended, and the label, you can't beat a little sexy on the label. Listen next as Nicole helps us all visually, virtually delve in to this next bottle on the table called Rusty Red.
It has a slightly pinker, or I usually refer to it as more of a rosé color to it. And this has a high proportion of our russet apples, which if people aren't necessarily russet aficionados, they have almost like a potato or pear-like texture to them. They're not the glossy, shiny apples that you see in the grocery store. Some of our favorite eating apples are russets, and it's a shame that more people don't have exposure to them because they're just, they're so good to eat. So we take a russet blend, and we cut that with some of our red-fleshed cider. Wow. And while I hate to make wine comparisons, I really do think this is more similar to like a rosé wine. I usually open this and let it breathe for a minute. I think it's got the floral and perfumey notes that some rosés have. I think there's that hint of sweetness in it, even though I would never describe it as sweet. It's just, it's good. I wasn't sure about this one when we first made it, but it's actually grown on me a lot.
Yeah, Rusty is an example of that. I think, you know, when we first served it fresh out of the bottle, not nearly as good as when it sat and mellowed a little bit. Our ciders don't typically get worse or better over time is what we tell people, but they will mellow a little bit within, I would say, the first month. And so a lot of times we try and let them sit in the bottle before we get them to the public.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea because there's something called bottle shock.
Yeah.
It naturally happens. And it's something that for somebody who's a non-commercial cider maker can get very discouraged, you know, thinking, what happened to my cider? It was so good and the carboy, you know, what's going on. And I think it's really good for people to know that cider will change. It's a live food.
Yeah.
You know, there's a live yeast in there, unless you're totally, you know, filtering it. But even still, it's going to change. And I think that's the magic of the apple.
Yeah.
You know, it really develops. And
we just have to trust the process sometimes, and we weren't really good at that in the beginning. But, you know, from the juice that you taste to the first racking to, you know, going in for carbonation to sitting in a bottle, it does change.
Yeah.
And so we've gotten better about that now. We don't rush to dump anything now.
No.
Good. Don't. I'll come out from my spot in Ciderville with my little, like, you know, 5-gallon kegs.
Yeah.
You know, don't ever do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had any we've dumped yet, but we've definitely thought about it once or twice.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because we all taste things and have different taste preferences. So you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen, essentially. I mean,
sure.
That might change as we're changing the business structure, but what he likes and the flavor profiles that I like, you know, you just kind of, we try to make ciders that we like to drink, but we also want to be cognizant of the market that's out there.
Yeah.
So just because I don't necessarily like something, I'm like, I could still see that being sellable to this particular market,
sure.
For instance,
yeah.
Someone who's looking for this. So that's another part of just trusting the process. Like, there's going to be a drinker for that out there, even if it's not my favorite.
Right.
And that's good advice, too, for the startups that are listening, new cider makers and people going into it, is that there is a cider for every palate. And if you keep open to that, then the product you made might be like that perfect sour or acetic cider that no one else loves, but actually that's what they serve main tap in some other part of the world.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's always an eye-opener too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest one is if we can get my mom to like a cider. She's kind of a little different than the rest of us with her palate. She definitely leans more sweet. So she doesn't like a ton of the ciders we make, but she's gotten a little more into it. She did a cinnamon one this year and really enjoyed that. And we did a sweet one. And we actually, Nicole came up with the idea in our tasting room. We mix some of those now to give people even different options. Just so that we're keeping it new and keeping it changing all the time, we have a couple suggested mixes that we'll do in our tasting room for people. And it actually helps our sales because they'll then come in and instead of buying one bottle, might buy two.
Sure. So they can mix it themselves.
Sure, sure. Yeah, brilliant. What's your mom's first name?
Her name is Cindy.
Cindy, you raised him well. Okay. Yay. And then we have over here the hopped cider.
Yes. So when we first opened 3 years ago, we're getting ready to celebrate our 3-year anniversary, we had 4 ciders. And our hopped cider is lucky number 13. We're in the process right now of designing the label for it. So we've just got kind of like a makeshift label on it right now. And we did some experimenting with different dry hops. We've got a good local company around us that's a beer supply store. And so we talked with them and got a couple different hops and did some experimenting. Then we had the public come out and do taste testing of them so they could get a flight of the different hops and they could also try the base just so they could see how the different hops changed the base cider. And we took name suggestions from them and we got their input on what they liked. And then we used all of that feedback to craft our final hopped cider.
So what might we expect? Is this like a dry hop cider?
It is. We took pelletized hops.
Post-fermentation.
Added them to our cider post-fermentation. So we had a finished cider.
Okay.
We threw the hop pellets in.
In like a bag?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Filtered them out.
Yep.
And then carbonated. And then used feedback. So when you dry hop a cider, you get a really nice floral aroma up front. You get some of that citrusy up front. And we find that it actually mellows a little bit of the cider flavor. But as with like an IPA style beer, you don't have that bitter hop finish. So like, he loves IPA beers. I only just became a beer drinker like recently and cannot get on board with IPAs. Just that bitter finish of them. But I love the grapefruit smell and that floral aroma up front. And I was like, gosh, I would love to have that in a cider. And it turns out you can get all that without the bitter finish.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really excited to try that because since we're talking about beers, and I know some people are like, nails on scratching a chalkboard as I'm referring to that, but you know, there's a West Coast style IPA, which is more like malty and sweet, and then there's kind of like the East Coast style IPA, which is a little bit more drier. So where would you say you're in the spectrum for your cider, which is not brewed at all?
Right.
It's fermented.
I would say it's more East Coast. In fact, Nicole has, I've introduced her to a couple East Coasts. I went out this year to the Burlington Beer Fest.
Nice.
And so brought a few back, Lawson's and things like that. And she actually did like some of them a little bit. So we're working on it.
I'm developing my beer palate still.
That's a great thing about being in this type of work, because and culture is that it really does change over time. What you're making here, you know, 15 years down the line, you might be like, hey, we're not adding any yeast at all. We're just going like wild. Then we have a couple, you know, yeast ones that we're adding for our public.
It's so funny because often, like, if we are offering people taste, like at our farmer's market, for instance, and they're not familiar with cider, especially not a traditional cider, they'll say, well, what is this, more of like a beer or a wine? And your first level of education is, it's not like either.
Right.
So
what do you say? This is always interesting.
I tell a lot of people that it's, you know, it's fermented like a wine, except the base is apples. Right, but the apples give it a completely different flavor than grapes will with wine. It's going to be a little more, I think, a little more fruit forward. You get that appley note, especially in the smell, at least with a lot of our ciders we do. So we get a lot of appley notes, smell and taste, and so that helps to tell them it's a little bit more of the fruit. Whereas, you know, if you go with like a dry red, you don't really get the grape notes. It's completely different. So That's what we tell people. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm sure there's a lot of other great things that maybe I'll learn this week on what I can tell people to try and introduce them to cider, but we keep changing, you know, and evolving what we're doing.
I think people expect a lot of times that cider is sweet, and they're like, oh, no, I've tried a commercially available, you see everywhere type of cider. That's not really for me. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And then it's the conversation of, great, we're not like that. We don't add any sweeteners. We just let the apples speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. So look into different kinds of ciders, because it's not what the cider market now is not what it was 5, 10, 15 years ago, where you only had a couple options available and they were on the overly mm-hmm. sweet side. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, well, I think you're doing exactly what needs to be done and doing a good job of it. Do you say it's hard cider?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. We do say it's hard cider, just to distinguish. In fact, we have two daughters, so it helps them to know what is hard cider and what's sweet cider. We often say we have the only, like, 7-year-old who will ask if that's hard cider or sweet cider before asking if they can have any. Mm-hmm. But we do call it hard cider just because that's, I think, kind of what we heard starting mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. I know England and my brother-in-law is from England, so we get a lot of perspective sometimes from him as well, which is nice. They just call it cider, right?
Yes.
And then everything else is sweet cider. So it is maybe evolving, but for right now, we do still call it hard cider.
Yeah. So you have your ciders available at the farmer market. That's the summer. Or is that year-round?
Our season in where we're from is May to October.
Okay. Yep. And what is that farmer's market called?
It's the Midland Area Farmer's Market.
Okay.
Hi. They're awesome.
Midland Area Farmer's Market.
Yep.
And do you have a tasting room?
We do.
Okay.
We have a small tasting room right on our orchard property. We only open on Saturdays right now. Saturdays from like 2 to 7 typically.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have other special events every once in a while, but Saturdays 2 to 7, and we really only run from summer until Thanksgiving. Yeah, okay. For right now, we'll do other events, like we're opening next weekend for our 3-year anniversary type of event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we distribute locally, so in Michigan we can self-distribute.
Mm-hmm. So primarily just in Michigan. If you want to get Forgotten Ciders, you got to come to Michigan, right?
Pretty much the Tri-Cities area, which is where we're from. One store in Ann Arbor and one restaurant bar in Detroit. Two in Detroit.
Two, a couple places in Detroit. Yeah. But we are looking to expand, especially with Nicole not working full-time now. That helps us to be able to do more sales.
Well, let's reframe that. You're working full-time.
Not yes,
sorry.
Another full-time job.
Yeah. Hopefully, one of our main incentives was just to be able to focus on some of the sales and distribution, getting the product out there, especially when the tasting room is closed seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And we do different, craft beer festivals. You don't really find a craft cider festival around us, so we've kind of piggybacked on some of those festivals, and those are a lot of fun.
Sure.
Yeah, we do the cider festival up at Uncle John's each year.
Great. Yeah, because Michigan's really amenable to cider, and there's so many amazing cideries.
We have some awesome cider makers up in our area.
Yeah.
If people haven't been to, like, the Leelanau Peninsula of Michigan, it's a great travel destination for craft beer, wine, and cider. And
so if folks are flying in, they'd be flying into...
You can fly into Traverse City, but it's a smaller airport, so normally you might fly into, like, Detroit. Flint, and then drive or connect from
there.
So
how far from Detroit?
We are about 2 hours from Detroit, from the airport.
Okay.
So 2 hours north, and Traverse is 4 to 5.
Yeah.
There are ways.
But it's really
there.
Pretty drive.
Really pretty drive. And we're in Chicago right now, and you said it's about 4.5 hours from here.
Yes,
yeah.
We're about four and a half to 5 hours from Chicago, depending on what part of Chicago.
So I was also curious about where you learned to make cider.
Our basement.
Yeah.
Before this whole orchard. And you got involved, or you got involved in the orchard and said, okay, let's make cider.
Yeah, the orchard came first. The cider came, I would say, a couple years after that.
Mm-hmm. Once the orchard was back in kind of working order and restored, right. Bared fruit a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because when we took over the orchard, it had been left for a couple years.
Needed
so
a bit of pruning.
It needed a bit of restoration,
right.
Pruning, mowing.
Who did that?
We did.
Okay.
We did. We hired a couple different pruners here and there to help us learn more than anything, but mm-hmm. we do a lot of it ourselves.
Because you're like in a number of different businesses.
Yeah.
Orchard care is like a whole science unto its own.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just tending those apple trees.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And your apple trees are more or less, did you say like about 30 years old or so?
Yeah, roughly yeah. 30 years
30
old.
30 years old. Any pear trees in there?
We do. We have one row of pears that we haven't done anything with. We're
yeah.
not sure what the varieties are, but we may try and do a Perry. I know Perry is a little different animal.
It is, yeah.
So, but we would like to expand and do a little bit more of Perry, maybe a little bit of a sizer,
mm-hmm.
Even yeah. up to a mead, we would mm-hmm. see. But we'd like to just expand a little bit in the future. I don't know when that will happen. But.
Perry, did you hear that?
When they start making Perry's, we're going to take a road trip to Forgotten Ciders.
I think we're all due for a trip to Michigan to go see the ciders and the Perry's.
Okay, Poms, I know you're excited. If they start making Perry at Forgotten Ciders, we're there. But I really don't need that as an excuse to visit them, because we all know that their ciders rock. Now let's get back to this chat with Nicole and Rafe Ward of Forgotten Ciders and Eastman Antique Apples, because we're going to be wrapping up soon, okay?
We're ready, Rhea. Take it away.
Any barrel aging at all?
Not yet.
Not yet. Yes,
I love
that word.
Yeah.
Or sentence,
to.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet,
yeah.
But we definitely want to.
We have all these things on our horizon.
Yeah.
That we're just like chomping at the bit to get to. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We will see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, barrel aging I think would come probably pretty quick if we can locate the right broker and get the right, mm-hmm. I mean, I want to get some
barrels.
Decent bourbon barrels to try mm-hmm. and use, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cider was king. Back in the day, you know, when America was being founded and they had these apple trees everywhere, everyone made cider. It didn't matter if you were rich, poor, everyone made hard cider. And then it kind of fell to the wayside with different immigrations and prohibition, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a little slow to come back to mainstream. Now it's here, you know, but so we kind of consider it the forgotten drink.
Well, thank you for doing your part in bringing it out, and may that label be kind of like become antiquated a little bit, no longer forgotten, but really well known.
Yeah.
But it's still really lovely what you chose to do, and
these
varieties are amazing.
I'd like to thank Nicole and Rafe Ward of Forgotten Ciders and Eastman Antique Apples. They are based in Michigan, and you'll be able to find all their contact info, see some great photos of the red-fleshed apples that they have on the show notes page for this episode number 74. And there are a couple updates that you should know about. For one thing, they're going to be celebrating their third year in this year, 2017, and they'll be opening the doors to their tasting room on April 29th, this month. They're actually at two farmers markets, so stay tuned for that, and you'll get the links in the show notes. That's the Midlands Area Farmers Market. They're there on Wednesdays from 2 to 7, and at the downtown Saginaw Farmers Market on Mondays from 1 to 6 p.m. Ooh, it's a good reason to head out to Michigan. Having tasted all the ciders that they passed my way, all of which we spoke about on this chat, I can definitely say they are making some delicious ciders. That hot and cider was fantastic with cheese. It was just one of the most smoothest chili ciders I have had to date. I love the hop cider. The rusty red, there's nothing rusty about that red. I mean, I like the name, but ooh, that was really, really like opening up your palate there. And of course, the Mad Russian was another brilliant color of that cranberry red, absolutely delicious. And then they're one of their main ones, which has 150 apples in it. Boo. And that's the Private Stash. Each cider delicious. Make sure when you can get out to Michigan, and maybe they'll start distributing more broadly. I'm sure that's in the pipeline coming up. So thanks again, Nicole and Rafe, and best of luck for this third year. You're all about cider going up. And as a reminder, remember there is a Cider Swag contest for two Forgotten Cider t-shirts. All you need to do is take a screenshot of you listening to Cider Chat Podcast and post it on Twitter or on Instagram or on the Cider Chat Facebook page. Make sure you tag Cider Chat and you'll be entered to win. Get the details at ciderchat.com. Just go to the page that says Cider Swag. I'll be picking a winner on April 14th, actually two winners, and you got everything to gain. Remember that this is based only for U.S. residents and folks up in Canada. Now, I made a little promise to a listener of Cider Chat, and that's Erica, that I would talk about shiitake inoculation. Shiitake is a mushroom that is really highly sought after because it's just kind of like one of those gourmet mushrooms, and they're pretty easy to grow if you have some key ingredients. Now, give you a little bit of a backdrop on this. I had a very large shiitake inoculation party one March. See, earlier in the year, during the holiday gift season, I was thinking, what am I going to do, you know, for everybody? And I said, well, you know, instead of giving them presents, I'll give folks a silver ticket, kind of like the Willy Wonka where you're searching for the golden ticket. In each little, like, individual envelope, some for some couples or, you know, one person or a family, they all received a silver ticket, which entitled them to 150 plugs. That's enough to inoculate 5 40-inch logs. And you could use a couple of different hardwoods. I was using oak logs from my property. So in total, I had on hand 3,000 plugs when we held the party. I think we had about 80 logs. We had all these ladders off, you know, like on sawhorses, and all these like 4-foot logs. And everybody just went to it. We had drills set up, and you basically set your drill at like with a depth about an inch or so. I think it's a 5/8 drill side. You make all the holes, you know, again, you put about 30 plugs in a log or something like that. I can't remember exactly. You tap it in with a hammer, and then you cover it beeswax. And we did that, and it was fantastic. So we gave the tickets in the holiday season of December, and then come March, we didn't have to do anything all that time. Come March, and we were taking down trees before the leaves came out. We took down the trees, and then just a couple days later, because you don't want to let the logs sit too long because fungi will start going in there, we had this huge outdoor inoculation party. It was a blast, and there's nothing better than giving a gift that keeps on giving, because you'd get these like phone calls or emails where folks would be showing you their logs when they are fruiting, and meaning that the shiitakes are coming out. I mean, these shiitakes could get huge at about, you know, 7 inches across, some of them. I am not kidding you. The key to doing that, and I saw some of the photos that Erica had online there, you had some pretty big logs. And what I've found, the key thing is water. It's all about water when you're growing shiitakes. So I've found since when I'm doing inoculation parties to actually have smaller log sizes that can fit in a 5-gallon bucket, because that's key. You want to immerse the logs for a couple days, and you kind of tap the logs at the end, and that kind of turns up the mycelium that's in the log, and then you get the fruiting. When they're really big, if you don't have a good water source, it's hard to keep those logs wet and moist. Unless you have a small, like, kitty-size pool, that might do it. But other than that, you're kind of stuck. I'm lucky enough to have a stream on my property, so that's where all the logs are stored on my land. and we just kind of roll them into the stream and pull them back out again. But even that can be really heavy and a little bit labor intensive, but it's worth it. You also want to keep your logs underneath shade. I mean, if you're in an apartment, you could do it. You could have your little 5-gallon bucket, and if you got a little outside porch, you could even do it. But you want it kind of in that like damp, really humid area, and that really is conducive for growing mushrooms. I find that you get an early spring fruiting, very, very delectable. You don't even find those kind of shiitakes, kind of a hard cap shiitake in the spring. And then later on in the fall, you get that more smoother type of shiitake. I've been growing them for many years and it's a ton of fun. I highly recommend having your own shiitake inoculation party. Just get your own little piece of like sheet metal, cut it up in like little business card sizes, write the year on it, like 2017, and this ticket entitles each person holding it X amount of plugs. And when you buy the plugs in bulk, you know, you save a little bit of money there. So good luck growing the shiitakes. I'm a big avid mushroom hunter. Can't wait till that starts happening around here. I know there's morels being found in different sections of the world right now. I'm kind of jealous about that. It's a little bit harder to find them up where I am, but we do look, and one thing to know about morels is they do like growing underneath apple trees. Isn't that perfect? And they are, oh, they're kind of a nutty mushroom, really, really delectable. So if you're out and about and you walk in your orchards, look for the morels. If you don't know what one looks like, well, just Google it and you could see for yourself. Not too hard to identify. I think it really goes perfectly with cider making too. It's just one of those fun ways to get out there, get into the earth, and getting your palate more sensitive to like the minerality in the soil and the nuttiness in both the fruit, and have that with a glass of cider. That just makes a nice day. So, tip of the glass to you, Erica, and to all the mushroom hunters and growers out there, and of course, the cider makers too. Well, make sure that you pass along this podcast and let other folks know about it. That's one way to help this podcast keep on thriving and keep on going up, just like the good folks at Current Cider in Pennsylvania, who are part of the Cider Going Up campaign page. And you could become part of that too if you're a commercial cider maker. Just go to the Cider Chat Patreon page and join today. I'll be looking forward to talking with Alan Shapiro next week of Cider Summits. They have a Cider Fest coming up in Chicago at the end of this month. A lot of happenings out there in Ciderville. So in the meantime, I hope your cup stays full and you are loving it out there in Ciderville. This is Rhea Windcaller saying ciao for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up.
Yeehaw!